Welcome back to the PDH online course on Design to the Fire Alarm Code, NFPA 72-2007. As promised, we're going to discuss the graphic of a fire alarm system. This is one of the joys of doing the audible oral version of the course. In my mind, you are driving down the highway at 65 miles an hour, keeping an eye open for trucks that are weaving back and forth. And I'm trying to tell you what a picture looks like so you can form that picture in your mind and draw on that picture when we talk about the individual components later on. So you might want to put this off until later, or if it's fun, adds to your challenge of going down the highway, let's continue. I think I'm going to make my picture a little bigger here. That's one of the joys of computers, that you can change the scale on it. As I get older, I enjoy zooming in more and more. As I get older, Microsoft drives me nuts more and more. Why is it each time I open Microsoft Word, it's a little different than it was last time? The one I have at work has a little thing you can enter at the top to change the zoom ratio, and I had to go through a bunch of menus to do this one. But I've got a bigger picture to look at now, and let me describe it to you, so see if it makes sense to you and if it helps your understanding of the material. First, this is not particularly a typical building. This is just a building, something for us to talk about that gives us a chance to display the components that make up a fire alarm system. I'm showing a two-story building because some things are kind of interesting between upstairs and downstairs. I've got a room on the left, a corridor in the middle, and a room on the right. So if we were trying to be technically accurate with this, it's probably a cross-section of that building with the corridor coming at you and a room here and then another room towards you and another room towards you, something like that. So on the second floor, there's a room, a corridor, and then a room. On the first floor, there's a room, a corridor, and a room. On the first floor, there's a door, which is called the outside door. Well, let's look around the outside of the building before we go into the building. This outside door has a strobe next to it. We'll discuss what that's about. On the top, there's a hood exhaust. There's a name for those. Somebody called those mushrooms. Well, you know, just one of those things where the fan is actually mounted on the roof with a shroud over it, sucks the air out of the hood and blows it down onto the roof or something like that. As we continue around the building, we see that there is piping from the water main to a shutoff valve to some sprinklers. And as we look inside, there's sprinklers in every room, and there's sprinklers in the corridor too. And there's this shutoff valve inside that it's got something called a flow switch on it and a tamper switch on it. And just outside at the same point is something called the sprinkler bell. Okay, so that tells us what's outside the building. As we continue our tour, just inside the door, there's a pull station. And I created my own symbol for this. It's a symbol I've never seen anywhere else. It looks like a pull station. Oh my, such innovation. It's a box with a bar across it, because that's what pull stations look like. They're around here, they're always red. I've seen some that are silver, and I understand. I've heard stories that Chicago has their own fire code, and they have things very different there, but I never stopped to look at the pull stations in Chicago, even though I've been there a couple times. Anyway, we've got a pull station, and we'll talk about different symbols that are used for pull station. I use the words pull station on my drawing. That helps people understand what it is. I got this box with the crossbar I told you about. It's got a little P on it, which I think also helps describe what's going on here. And we've got pull stations at the door, and we've got a pull station in the hallway. And we've got a pull station at the door from the kitchen. They remember the exhaust hood we were talking about? So those are our pull stations in this building. We've got something up towards the ceiling on the sidewall. It's a box with a triangle poking into it. The first one has a label on it, strobe horn or speaker horn. And this is one of many symbols used for this device. There is no letter in this particular one, because you don't run into boxes with triangles poking into them that often. And I don't think you run into boxes with a crossbar on them that often. It's most common to put a letter on the symbol for a fire alarm. It helps people gain confidence that they found the right symbol when they go to the symbol legend. And perhaps that's an error on my part that I didn't put anything on the strobe horn or speaker horn. And those show up in each of the rooms and in the hallways. As we look at this, there are doors into the corridor. And the doors into the corridor have some funny-looking little thing like a T on its side and the letters H-O. And we'll find out in a moment. Those are hold opens or magnetic door hold opens. So people can go up and down the hallway without impediment. But in the event of a fire, the corridor doors close, and it's supposed to block the smoke from migrating to other parts of the building. When there are people there, they can still push them open and go through. When there aren't people there, the smoke does not go through. In the ceiling, we've got kind of a boxy-looking thing with the letters SD on it and the words under it, smoke detector. And this shows up in the corridors, especially in the corridor near these hold opens. In three of the four rooms, in two of the four rooms, not in the utility room, I see that now, and not in the kitchen. In the utility room and kitchen, there's the same symbol, but the letters HD, and one of them says heat detector. As far as the ceilings go, we talked about the main water incoming and the shutoff valve and the sprinkler. Well, in fact, there are sprinklers in each of the rooms and sprinklers in the hallway. All that's remaining then is the fire alarm control unit. That's a box in the utility room. And the annunciator. The annunciator here is a box with a couple lines on it. It just says annunciator. It's near the front door. Now, good drawings are supposed to have a legend. Let's make sure this one has a legend to go with it. Is that the right word? Anyway, it says, where? Sprinkler head is a mechanical device to release a spray of water into the space. I teach this course interactively for the state of New York, and I have students who've never looked at a sprinkler head closely. They're amazing devices. I was studying sprinkler systems for a test I was taking. But anyway, I got real involved in sprinkler heads. There's all kinds of different sprinkler heads for different purposes and different temperatures to where they trip off. Basically two styles. Well, probably a lot more styles than that, but basically two styles. One has a little tab that breaks and the spring pops the valve open and the water sprays down. It sprays down on this reflector and the reflector distributes it all over the place in the spray manner so that it doesn't come out as a like a hose stream. It comes out as a spray of droplets. And this thing that breaks is solder. It's got solder that melts at a specific temperature, and when enough of that temperature, you know, hot air gets up to it, it melts and the thing pops open and it sprays. The other form has a little glass, it's probably not glass, it looks like glass, bauble with a red liquid in it, and the different colors indicate the different temperatures, but when this gets hot, it breaks. And again, the thing pops open, and the stream of water hits the reflecting plate, and then it sprays droplets all over the place. So sprinklers are very, very interesting. The point and the reason we talk about this in so much detail is a sprinkler head is a standalone unit. You put water into it. It decides if it's going to spray or not. Nobody tells it to spray, well, unless you figure the hot gases that are melting the solder are telling it to spray. But it's not like there's a wire hooked up to a sprinkler. A sprinkler is a standalone unit. Now, there's somebody out there who's a lot more sophisticated than I am, and he's going to tell you about dry systems that, in fact, do have an electric valve that open and then they spray. The very specialized system, very limited application. Standard sprinkler head you're going to see in every doctor's office, waiting room, in every restaurant. You know, just when you see sprinklers, what you see are either the solder ones or the ones with the little liquid, and typically they're red again. A smoke detector is an electrical device to signal the presence of smoke, part of the general group initiation devices. HO is magnetic door hold open, an electric device to hold the door open until an alarm, usually connected to the group notification devices. What that means is when the alarm goes into alarm, the notification devices operate and the hold open lets the door go. Hold opens can be very interesting. We're not going to talk about it in this course, but you can get them that you apply power to release or you apply power to hold. And that sounds unlikely. Don't magnets only work when you put electricity through them? Well, yeah, but if you have a permanent magnet there, what you do is you put electricity through it and you cancel the permanent magnet. So it's magnetic when it's not energized, and it's non-magnetic when it is energized. Isn't that bizarre? Well, I thought it was funny. Heat detector, an electrical device to signal a high temperature or rapid rise in temperature, part of the general group initiation devices. Pull station, an electrical device to permit manual initiation of alarm. Flow switch, an electrical device to signal operation of the sprinkler system, part of the general group initiation devices. Tamper switch, an electric device to signal that a valve is not full open, part of the group supervisory devices. Once again, those are tricky words. Make sure you understand that if you haven't run into this before. Valves are open or closed. When a valve is open, water goes through it. When a valve is closed, water does not go through it. What happens when it's halfway open? Don't know for sure. We know when it's open. We know when it's closed. We monitor when it's full open. So the switch is made when the valve is in the full open position. Quarter turn off full open, it's no longer full open, and we go into alarm. Now, is it closed? No, it's just away from full open. It's towards closed, and we want somebody to come out and look at it. By the way, I may have used the word alarm. I don't mean that. It's a trouble signal, meaning somebody should go out and look at it. It doesn't mean we evacuate the building. Strobe horn, an electrical device providing visual and audible indication of the alarm, part of the group notification devices. Strobe speaker, an electrical device providing visual and audible indication of the alarm, part of the group notification devices. Used to be that horns were cheap and speakers were expensive because there was a lot of electronics to make a speaker work. As technology has advanced, the strobe speakers are now competitively priced with strobe horns. So there's basically no reason to put in a strobe horn. And there's a lot of benefits to having a strobe speaker. Mostly because you keep having these false alarms and you can tell people this is a false alarm, you don't have to evacuate. Sometimes the fire department gets real unhappy if you do that. They want the idea communicated to people that when you hear that alarm signal, you do evacuate. They don't want the idea communicated to people that it's a false alarm and you wait until you get a message whether to leave or not. I worked at a place where the receptionist used to come around and say, "This is a real alarm. This is not a false alarm. Please leave your desk." Actually, I've worked a lot of places. That was kind of incidental just because she didn't want people. Anyway, she didn't want it on her arm. But I've worked other places where they have a floor warden who comes around and makes sure everybody leaves. So, yes, there's a benefit to having the speaker. There is no detriment to having the speaker. It's a little bit sensitive in being used properly. I mean, if we have a tornado warning, that's a great time to be using the speaker function on the fire alarm system. If we're having a lot of false alarms, it's probably not the best time to be using the speaker system because it's, again, communicating the wrong message. Fire alarm control unit. I think it is so funny that they changed this from fire alarm control panel. Isn't that just like the government? Our major innovation is we changed it from panel to unit. It's a central device containing the logic for the fire alarm. Usually contains 24-hour batteries. Now, once again, this isn't our part of designing fire alarms in this course, but it's very, very interesting how the batteries are rated in a fire alarm unit. They have to sit there with no charging for 24 hours and then go through a full alarm function. And to me, that's impressive. That's exactly what you want a fire alarm to do. If somebody knocks over the pole and you've got no electricity, you still want the fire alarm to work. And that doesn't mean sit there with the red light on. That means it goes into the alarm state when the smoke detector senses bad vapors out there. And that's the way it's tested, and then that's the way it's designed. Sprinkler bell, an electrical device for audible report of sprinkler operation. Outdoor strobe, an electrical device for visual report of building with alarm. And if this sounds a little strange to you, it's a specialized thing. Some municipalities require it. They want to make it easy for the firefighters to find out where the alarm's coming from. Yeah, you give them a street address, but sometimes it's hard to find a street address. You got a yellow light flashing on the side of the building. It's pretty clear which one you're talking about. Again, I mentioned I've had some experience in campus settings. Well, in campus settings, it's very common to have a number representation for the facilities people and a name representation for a building for everybody else. So it's Simmons Hall to the people who go to class there, but it's building E25 to the facilities people. Well, yes, you want the firefighters to come by once a year and become familiar with the campus, but having a yellow light flashing on the building with the problem sure makes life, it helps people do what they're supposed to be doing. Oh, I didn't describe this. Let's go back to the picture just a moment. In the kitchen, there's this exhaust hood over a cooking grill. I mean, there's nothing exciting about that. In the exhaust hood are a couple of these little sprinkler symbols. There's a pipe going from this sprinkler symbol to a tank. You know, it looks like an acetylene tank, probably not an acetylene tank. And it's labeled Ansel. Well, Ansel is a brand name owned by a company called Tyco for a local fire suppression system, usually connected to the group initiation device. It's a complete standalone fire suppression system, but it also trips the building evacuation. Now, I've got to be careful on the words here because there's a lot of truth in what I'm saying and there's an improper conclusion in what I'm saying. When I say it trips the building fire alarm for evacuation, that's 100% correct, except you don't have to evacuate. I mean, today everything's a computer. You can program the central logic that we just talked about, the fire alarm control unit, so that it does evacuate or it doesn't evacuate or it evacuates part of it or it voice pages the custodian or it telephone dials the principal. I mean, you can do anything with these computerized fire alarms. And in fact, the connection to a suppression, standalone suppression system like this is usually handled as a very special case because the whole point is the suppression system takes care of the problem. You wait until there's a smoke alarm or a heat alarm before you evacuate the building. If the suppression system works, it contained the fire under the hood. Now, yeah, you want to get it logged. That's one of the things that the central unit does is it maintains a permanent log of trouble alarms and smoke alarms and all the good things that happen. But you don't necessarily want to evacuate when the local suppression system operates. The other example that was not on the picture is a computer room. And as I've been thinking about this, I should have done that. And when we do the next revision, I will, because I install a lot of computer rooms and I install a lot of computer rooms with underfloor fire suppression systems. Now, usually they flood, the old name is Halon. That's the reason I brought it up, because we always call them Halon systems. Can't use Halon anymore. It's been declared a toxic substance. They are not Halon systems, but they look and smell like Halon systems. They're a standalone computer room suppression system. And we'll get into that in the course. But they work just exactly like this Ansel system on the grill hood that was described here. Mag lock, and there weren't any on the picture, but it's something we should talk about. That's an electric device in the security system. connected to the fire alarm and the group notification devices, and may be fail-safe or fail-secure. And yes, this is just a teaser. We're going to get into that discussion later, but it's something you probably see as you're walking around. A lot of times people have mag locks on the emergency exits. They really don't want people going through the emergency exits. Well, unless there's an emergency, of course. And they'll put a mag lock in addition to the panic bar. And the panic bar doesn't work unless the mag lock is disabled. And the fire alarm system is supposed to disable the mag lock. And we'll talk about that, and there are exceptions where it doesn't, and good reasons for it, too. Elevator, not shown on the picture, but going to be of interest to us. Normal path of egress. That is, you use the elevator to leave the building. Usually safely shut down during a fire alarm by an auxiliary relay in the group notification devices. That is, the alarm goes into alarm state, and it operates the notification devices, strobe horns, strobe speakers, and it shuts down the elevator. And we'll talk about that. It can get fairly complicated. Now, let's talk about what the architect and what the electrical designer have to do in a fire alarm. If you hear some funny grunting and groaning, I'm checking to see the time. Yeah, we've certainly got time to talk about this. The illustration described above introduces the first consideration in fire alarm design. Is a fire alarm required? And also, what type of fire alarm is required? Well, the answers come from interpretation of the building code against the present facility. An architect is specially trained to make this interpretation. The underlying questions are building construction type and building usage type. The designer must understand enough to ask the right questions, but the architect should provide the answers and sign and date the document. In construction projects, there's a lead sheet which summarizes the construction type and use group, but it's often not in the set provided to the electrical designer. A new PDH online course, G210, entitled National CAD Standard 3.1-07, presents architect responsibilities in the construction drawing package. Another key question is occupancy. That is, how many persons are expected to be in the room? If the answer is 50 or more, it's a place of assembly and normally requires more devices than an office or workroom. The architect must make this decision. Caution, if a fire alarm is not required by the building code, but the owner chooses to install one anyway, it must comply with the fire alarm code. And there's a further exception on this. The owner is permitted to put in a partial, optional fire alarm system. That is, he can choose to only put it in the part of the warehouse containing the high-value items that he's most worried about. He wants to get the earliest warning to prevent a fire from damaging him. This is the sort of thing I don't like a bit. When I put in a fire alarm, I want it to be a full fire alarm, and I want it to be a life safety fire alarm. Nothing bothers me more than knowing that there's a fire and we've decided not to alarm. I mean, it just makes my skin crawl. Standard terms, abbreviations, and symbols. Terms, abbreviations, and symbols are not rigidly defined by NFPA 72, but there are a number which are commonly used, and it's essential to include a legend of abbreviations and symbols used in the design. The following legend sheet was taken from a recent fire alarm project. Now, in the written version of this, there's the whole legend sheet. I am only going to address the fire alarm components on this, because that's what we're doing today. The reason I gave you the whole sheet was because this is more likely what you're going to see if you pick up a drawing. And also, it says legend sheet at the top. I have, of my many fears, obsessive compulsive disorder, you know, is an unlabeled illustration. So I try to label my illustrations, and I try to choose illustrations that already have a label on them. So when you say that illustration, we can describe it by name and we know what we're talking about. Let's look at the fire alarm components here. There is a long, thin box with herringbone crosshatching in it. The lines go diagonal one way, and at the same point, the lines go diagonal the other way. And it's called a fire alarm panel. And on this legend sheet, taken from a real project, it's called a Simplex 4010 or Proved Equal. And we'll get into a discussion whether it's a good thing or a bad thing to call out Simplex part numbers. I always say no, that our primary goal in a construction project is to make it biddable so that people with better ideas and people who are real hungry but don't have a Simplex franchise can get the job. Saying Simplex 4010 does describe the fire alarm panel very well because it's a well-known device. The specifications are public, and you can decide very easily if your panel is an approved equal to the Simplex 4010. And I'm sure that almost every manufacturer out there tries very hard to have something that's a direct substitute for Simplex 4010. There's a hex polygon with an S in it. And this is called an ionization smoke detector. And in this particular specification, it's got a Simplex part number. There's or approved equal, excuse me. There's a hex with a P in it. And that's a photoelectric detector. And again, there's a Simplex part number. There's a hex polygon with an H, and that's a heat detector. A square box about the same size with an F in it that's called a manual pull station. Says here, addressable type, mounted 45 inches above finished floor, Simplex part number such and such on a surface box or approved equal. And I wondered when I looked at this why they're putting it on a surface box, and I'm pretty sure this was a retrofit into an existing building. You put a surface box in an existing building, you'd put a recessed box in a new construction. Very strange symbol that I didn't recognize at first, and I may have trouble describing for you. It's a solid box. It's a box about the same size as the F we were just talking about, but it's all solid. It's all black. It's got a long, thin thing sticking out one side of it, and adjacent to that is a short thing sticking out the side of it. It says this is a Simplex part number such and such duct smoke detector with remote LED and test, furnished and installed by electrical contractor. And it's got Simplex part numbers on this. What the fellow on this project did was he tried to draw a picture of a duct detector. And in fact, they look like that. They got a box, and inside the box is an absolutely ordinary smoke detector. And there's two tubes sticking out that go into the duct. One's a long one and one's a short one. And something about the airflow causes a little bit of it to flow through the smoke detector. And that way you get a smoke detector in the duct. In this drawing legend sheet, we've got a box with a triangle pointing into it, which is the same symbol I used on mine. It's called an audible visual appliance mounted 78 inches above finished floor with a Simplex part number, horn strobe, synchronized 110 candela or approved equal. There's a box with a V in it. And this is called a visual appliance mounted 78 inches above finished floor, 110 candela, synchronized, Simplex part number or approved equal. Now we're going to get into the sort of thing that bothers me greatly, and I guess it's me being on my high horse. In this symbol legend, they have a horizontal line, a long vertical line, a short vertical line, and a diagonal line. It says, number 12 conductors in 1/2-inch conduit with green wire ground concealed in wall or ceiling. And the reason this is one of my pet peeves is I don't like giving wiring information on fire alarm drawings. Why is that? Well, there is a break in responsibility between the designer and the installer. And I like to push that break towards the designer, push the work towards the installer. I want him to pick out the wire. The reason is the code is very picky about what wire you use. It has to be wire that's approved by the manufacturer for use with his equipment. But it's also got to be bigger wire when you've got more devices. It has to be bigger wire when it's farther out. And if I tell the guy number 12 conductors or number 14 conductors, and it turns out that because of the calculations, it requires number 10 conductors, we've got a bad situation here. An inspector looks at it and says, no, the drawing says number 14 and you put in number 10. But the installer did exactly what he was supposed to do. He put in the right wire size for the installation, but he's violating the installation instructions given by the engineer. We don't want that situation. We want everybody to agree on how to do a good one. And how you do a good one is you install the wire that the computer program tells you to do. And we'll talk about those computer programs in a moment. The key concepts in choice of fire alarm symbols are uniqueness and recognition. If V in a box means fire alarm visual notification device, it must not be used for ceiling speaker volume control. S in a box usually means ceiling speaker, so the designer chose a hex box for smoke detector. Now, nuance of preference, I prefer different letters. S is speaker, S is smoke detector. Different boxes, yeah, but it's a little harder for me to read the difference between a hex and a box than read the difference between SP and SD. And that's a preference thing. The rule is visually recognizable, so you know they're different. There's a controversy over putting manufacturer and part number on drawings as opposed to including them in the specification. The example symbol legend shows simplex part numbers are equal. This actually constitutes a specification, since simplex documentation is widely available and readily comparable to third-party suppliers. For example, on the symbols above, the horn symbol for an audio visual notification device is very recognizable, even though physically they don't look much like that anymore. They actually at one time had a horn sticking out of the horn. Now it's just a grill with a speaker behind it, or maybe a vibrating metal plate. This example is immediately usable, except for lack of a remote enunciator. Most common reason rejected for fire alarm designs is lack of an enunciator panel at the firefighter's entrance. A box with the text ANNC is sufficient for the plan. Some description and a simplex part number for this example would be required. This might be a good time to discuss the break in responsibility between the electrical designer and the fire alarm contractor. In almost all cases, the designer is preparing a package for bid. He should probably not be brand specific. Also, different manufacturers and different models from the line of a single manufacturer use different devices to connect to remote devices. An addressable system will require an interfacing relay with a multiplexer to connect to an ANSL system. A hardwired system can connect directly to terminals on the local panel. Your instructor recommends against providing detail to the level of wiring, interfacing relays, and multiplexers. A general note on the drawing and the specification should indicate that the provider is responsible for a complete operating system satisfactory to the authority having jurisdiction. And I say again, And it's cover your tail, yeah, but it's communicating the requirements to the guy who's doing a takeoff for his bid and to the guy who's installing it. We're looking for a complete operating system satisfactory to the authority having jurisdiction. Next, we'll talk about riser diagrams, which have changed over the years. And to me, just the fact that they've changed and how they've changed is kind of interesting. Please join me when we resume on the next audio section.